So I'm trying to say something about what we had yesterday. So during the last tutorial, many of you realize that I should consider the commutator of J and P in one of the questions. It's the question, say if helicity is conserved. And there are many, there are two P's there. Of course you should consider that. And the good news is the after you considered it still vanished. So helicity is still conserved in time, so which is nice. If you wonder if helicity is Lorentz invariant, you should check out Appendix F. Because what we did is we have some counterexample. Oh, it didn't work when m equals zero. But because it's Appendix F, I'm not going to like examine you about it. But just if you're curious why helicity is Lorentz invariant, there is a serious proof about it. Okay, from now on, I said, we'll be examined. I'm very serious. So I think the key result of yesterday's tutorial, what's the key result of yesterday's tutorial? If you say, I'm defining a wild fermion, then this fermion should have a certain property that you discovered. Otherwise, it's not a well-defined, well-firm.
Massless.
Okay. So this is the key result yesterday. Well-fermion must be massless. Okay. There are two types of questions I will ask you, which give you the same answer. Two proposed calculations that could happen in interview. I like gamma 5 a lot. So a lot of gamma 5 manipulation will go through. And the the first calculation is, why can't I write down a mass of well fermion? Look, I write down the mass term of well fermion right there. What's wrong with it? And you need to show me this just vanish. And then the second computation is that why Dirac fermion is made of two well fermion, but it does have mass. So you need to do the second computation to realize all the Dirac mass come from the mixed type, the left and the right. And if any term involves more than one type of field, we call it interactions. Well, there is also self-interaction. But if you have a term has two different kinds of field, that's definitely an interaction. Okay. Moral of the story is learn about gamma 5 very well. Okay. So let me list the key result yesterday. Well, because we're going to use it, maybe, but the important part is yesterday, at some point, Psi developed some index. And then at least two of you point to me that where did the index come from? So I'll go to do it this explicitly for you for a few equations. So what did we do? What did we get? Basically, we get a Dirac equation. And we get the Dirac Lagrangian so that we can canonical quantize. So I hated to write something that's incomplete in this situation. So I'll just write all of them. So remember, the three things together is called the Dirac equation. If you don't tell me what are gamma, what are the kind of constraints they satisfy, you're just writing me a linear equation with random coefficients. Okay, so let's go through this argument again. Why Psi somehow end up having an index and no longer is one component? the argument comes from this line. So if I make assumption gamma mu is number, one number, one component number, then I'll have four unknowns because gamma 0, 1, 2, 3. And then if I look at the equation, it's like for each entry of this matrix, we have an equation. But it's symmetric, which means all this counts, and then you can pick a triangle, it counts. And together, there are 10 equations. I mean, you can hope there are four numbers to solve these 10 equations, but it doesn't work. So we need to go to higher dimension for gamma. So it starts with gamma, that we need some index. So gamma, instead of being a number, we'll have to consider gamma as a matrix. Okay. So I'm going to write a couple times today with all the index restored, because it's good to know they are there at the first time you study. But as you can open any quantum field theory book on Dirac thing, you would know that we always try to omit some index. Well, why would we do that? So I'm going to write out, if I have all the index, this will be y that gamma mu is a matrix. So the definition of a gamma mu will be written like this. Because the anti-commutator, I can't quite write it with index anymore, so I need to restore them, restore it into two parts. But this is very clear. Gamma is a matrix times gamma, which is a matrix. So now this is a matrix. And you swap them, you get another matrix. These two matrix, two terms add together, give you two eta mu nu, which is also a matrix. Okay, in the same fashion, we can write our Dirac equation this way. So there is Dirac equation here. What we just said is gamma is a matrix. And you can say this doesn't work. You can't just have a gamma is a matrix. Then there will be a matrix subtracting a number. We don't want that, so we'll put a identity there so that it's a matrix subtracting a matrix. But the matrix need to be acting on something. And that something will have the last index. So that's how Dirac field gained an index. So you can continue this argument. It says, if I have gamma mu as a matrix, and then the last thing is this, which is the group member, which is the representation of the Lorentz group. For the same reason, if the generators are matrix, the group member is matrix too. And I can write this. So I'll write out how Dirac field transform like this. And tomorrow in the tutorial, you will be having great fun to look at all these objects, what a kind of an index. It will be a tutorial, try to disentangle different items, like what's gamma, what's psi, what's the Dirac operator, what's the transformation thing. And every little monster, hopefully, will be identified. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow. There's zero calculation tomorrow. We're just going to ask what's these things, because I understand if they all carry an index and they never carry index in the books, it's very confusing. By the way, I wrote that tutorial because one of the science come to me says, I have this, you know, basic slash stupid question. But that become like one of the tutorial I'm most proud of, because a question. So that's why I said every question is a good question. Some of them I can make a tutorial out of that question. Okay. I guess the last thing I'm going to write the mode expansion with all possible index there are. So now what we know is this carrying index A. So A goes from 1 to 4. Notice the difference. Mu nu goes from 0 to 3 because they live in the Lorentz, live in the space-time we live in. But the A and the B goes from 1 to 4. It's forming this spinner space. It's whatever the gamma is. If you go higher dimension, then you wouldn't have such trouble. They would not equal. It's in 4 dimension that it's confusing. So what do we do? Is to expand this as something of a solution. So U at this point, so what we do is we make an ansatz says that you're gonna have a positive solution. You have a solution look like that, and I'm gonna solve it. I'm doing in a very, hopefully very slow way, so that it's completely incomplete until we go through everything. So here is a solution. So the ansatz is really psi equals u times this. So in order to make the index match, u needs to carry this spinner index. So because that's my answer. And then, how many solution of U do you think? I was like, so what kind of question is that? You just told me that don't solve the solution, and you're asking me how many solution are there. That question actually can have 3 different answers. So the first answer is actually I solve the thing, which of course, however many solutions it gave you, then you have that many solutions. But you can also answer from the physical point of view. So Dirac claims that he's gonna discover electron and anti-electron. So how many degrees of freedoms are there? Electron has 2 spins. The other also have 2 spins. So we know together there's going to be 4 solutions, but there is also this V. There is the other solution with the different ansatz. So if together is 4, they each get 2. Which means we need to label this label this solution with a spin. So there is a spin half solution, and there is a spin minus half solution. So there are two solutions. There is also the cool way. I'll tell you the cool way, how do you get 4 degrees of freedom soon. So now we want to write some linear coefficients, right? So you just call it some depend on P so that the integral is there. But you have to add up all the solution. So if there is two solutions, you should linear combine them. So this, as a result of you have two U's, you should each give them a linear coefficient. And similarly, there is also this say star S thing. Okay, so now you compare. To the left, you have the correct spinner index. So this is often called at the spinner index because of psi transform in the spinner representation. So it's like when I was reading Antoni Zee's book about the relativity, I think, and he says tensor is just something transformed in a tensor, like a tensor. So that's all I can tell you about a spinner. Spinner is something that a transform like spinner. So you define the representation, and whatever transform like that is named after it. Okay, I hope I don't miss anything, but this is coefficient, and this is the coefficient. And this is the solution. Okay? It shouldn't look very different from the scalar case, except the scalar U is 1, so U disappears. Okay, so before we start to quantize scalar Dirac field, maybe I'll explain to you why do I believe that there are two solutions each, so 4 degrees of freedom. It's actually an interesting question because let me present you a puzzle. The puzzle is psi is a complex four-component field. And a complex means two real degrees of freedom, but it's a four-component. How do we lose half? So the idea of defining degrees of freedom actually is not the dimension of the configuration space. So for example, if you think, it makes sense. See, I'm a particle that moves in three dimensions. So you would think I'm actually have 3 degrees of freedom. It's right, but the deductive reasoning, there is a loophole there. So what actually happened is degrees of freedom is actually the dimension of the phase space. Divided by 2. And luckily for me, I have 3 dimensions in the x direction and a 3 dimensions in the p direction, so they add up, divided, and it's still 3. But the Dirac field is different. In your homework, you're going to make this computation. You're like, but I haven't made the computation yet. I know, but remember, it's about the canonical momentum. But back in the scalar case, because there are 2 derivatives in scalar field, so your momentum still have 1 time derivative left. But now we only have 1 time derivative. So when you do the canonical momentum computation, there is not going to be time derivative left. What you have left is this thing. But the idea is in Dirac field, the canonic momentum provides exactly the same 8 degrees of freedom, the eight thing as your field. So your momentum doesn't give you more extra things to deal with, and hence for Dirac, what happens is that it equals to the dimension of the psi divided by 2, which is 4. Okay, so how many degrees of freedom does Weyl have? Weyl fermion? If Dirac has 4? 2. Because it's a half. Okay. Yeah.
Why is the dimension of psi the dimension of the phase space, not the configuration space?
Why is the dimension of psi not the dimension of?
Why is it the dimension of the phase space and not of the configuration?
Okay, so it should have. So why is the phase space? So the idea is that when we say dimension of psi and psi dagger, so that's actually what the dimension of a phase space are. So there's psi and the pi. And you're like, how come this drops out? So what I'm saying is that if I have a psi and I have like a plus ib, A1, A2, and something like this. But the pi have this thing, which it's still the same variables. It's still, it might become B1 minus IA1. I'm making it up here. But the point is, the thing that is free to choose whatever they want is still the same. It doesn't contain new information. It's like if I say, I have a dimension, I'm trying to calculate the dimension of this space. I have x direction, y direction, z direction, and there is also this x plus y direction, some random direction that's not along the axis. And then we ask, what's the dimension of space? Because that one is just a linear combination of the bases I already choose, so I don't count that.
So is it because of the action you've chosen, the dimension of the configuration space and the phase space are equal?
That's right. It's because we choose a one-time derivative action. This would not work for, so it's only worked for Dirac. If you have a scalar field, then you should have 1 plus 1 divided by 1, divided by 2, and you get 1 for scalar field. That's right. Because for scalar field, the pi looks like phi dot, which can be very different from phi. Okay, so I hope this clear up some confusion about all the, some of the index. But as I said, tomorrow we have a whole gymnastic about the index. I hope at least everything. Every year I ask, if I missed any unidentified monster, please let me know. And I haven't got anybody back. So I probably list all the possible things, like psi and gamma, and all these things that you would ever encounter in the Dirac theory. Okay, so what we're gonna do is to compare and contrast the quantization of a scalar field and of Dirac field. And this is literally one of the interview questions. So you need to tell me, how do you quantize Dirac field? Okay, quantization. But I think I should pause here. Is there any question about the things that I talked about like Monday's stuff? Before we continue, what's step one? What's step one?
The Lorentz invariant Lagrangian.
That's right. Lorentz invariant Lagrangian. This is very easy for Klein-Gordon. It says you write down the harmonic oscillator and turn the time derivative into the full derivative of a four dimension, and you get this. So there's phi is already Lorentz invariant, so we can write down whatever you want. You have this. I hope Dan have written something like this for you. Just polynomial of the phi, and they can all be very nice interactions. As you will see on Friday we'll have much more trouble to find out the interactions because Psi is a spinner. We want a Lorentz invariant thing, so we must do some stitching. Okay. So that's Lagrangian equals Psi bar, and the rest part looks like Dirac equation. So this is the key result yesterday. And you will know how to show me this thing is Lorentz invariant. Why this thing is Lorentz invariant? I might not be questioning about the connected term, but I will sure question the other term. Okay. Step two. Now that we finally have a Lagrangian, what should we do? Kind of like the title of your second homework. Hamiltonian, get a Hamiltonian. Okay, so Hamiltonian is the integral over space. And you shouldn't be like questioning this, like, you just like say, best of my knowledge, I will write down a Lorentz invariant Lagrangian. And next step, we're going to break it. What's the rationale now of that? Do I still get something Lorentz invariant by the end of the day? Okay, so I'll write the Hamiltonian over here. I think now you might have build some good relationship of this thing because yesterday you did a lot of commutator with it. So I say you can do the same thing. Okay. I wrote one line less. This line should be above the other line. So this line. The definition, the pq dot minus l thing, and they integrate it over, and that's the result. Okay, so step, let me call it a 2.5, it says you have some mode expansion, you stick it in, and you will have your Hamiltonian in terms of creation, well, not yet, in terms of some coefficients. We haven't promoted it yet. So I hope you remember this result. It's kind of like if you promote them to be operator, this is kind of like the number of particles times its energy, and written in two ways, but divided by two looks like energy. Energy times number. and integrated over momentum. Okay, so what I'm writing here you will not recognize unless you finished your second homework. But this is what you are going for. This. I have many tolerance about the calculation errors. This is the one minus sign you can't miss. Okay? For every homework I receive, doesn't get a minus sign between the two terms, I'm going to send it back. I'll elaborate why this minus sign is so dear to me in the next step. Okay, but it's sort of okay, right? B dagger B is like the number of B particles, and the sort of a C dagger C is like a number of C particles. So when you get to something like this, this is the correct answer. And that's what you want to get in your homework with playing with spinner identities. Okay, the next step is to promote to operators. So this is where, like at this point, I mean, we would see that's a similar process. You read Lagrangian, figure out what's Hamiltonian. It's the next step that is it's different. I'll do the 3 + 4 together because from step 3 it's different. So I'll just remind you what you have seen in scalar theory. In scalar theory, you say, I love this commutator relationship. So I'm going to assume that the field also have this kind of commutator relationship because I'm considering my field is like my position. And if you do such assumption, if this is your assumption, and now you have a mode expansion, you will show that there is going to be a commutator relationship . So that's dense normalization, has something like 2 pi to the cube times 2e. It's the normalization will exactly cancel what's hidden in this momentum. So it's very nice when you use the, whenever you use this commutator relationship, you will know that it's going to be integrated over, so no more factors. Okay. So then there is a step 4 called the normal ordering. And it says, oh, I don't like that AA dagger thing. So I'm going to say if you're not normal ordered, it'll become an A dagger A. Then the normal ordered Hamiltonian becomes exactly what we expected. So that's what happened in the scalar field. You assumed something and you promote them, whatever that's supposed to mean, but you get a commutator relationship because you assume the commutator relationship. You assume phi is just like x, and pi phi is just like p. Okay, if If the first is true, then the other is true. And then you want to really turn this thing around such that you have a Hamiltonian you are happy with. There are some infinities that's hiding in some carpets, but that's fine. So we're going to do step 3 and 4 for Dirac field. Well, the first thing you do is there's this lesson. Lesson from scalar field. Lesson from scalar field is commutators are good. They get my Hamiltonian to be that stage. And also, I don't know what else I could assume, right? Because, okay, can I call my psi phi that also is kind of a direction, and the pi psi is also kind of a momentum to there? I mean, that's actually how Townes notes and Paskin deal with it, is assume that the psi and pi also form the commutator relationship, and until they hit a wall and they say, okay, we can't do it. But this is what the other way to assume the commutator is. Instead of assuming that commutator, you can see that this commutator is, when you assume it, it's kind of messy because each of them has that mode expansion. So what are we going to do is to assume the commutator for the particles. Very clean. Okay, so now what we're going to do is assume commutator. Okay. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to copy just the things in the parentheses. You can see that outside parentheses, they're just a single EP. I mean, what kind of damage can I do? Right? And now I'm going to drop all the index. So first I have to promote them, turn the star into daggers, but then I'll write like this because carrying the index doesn't help us. Yeah, can you agree? This is what this look like if I promote the operator and forget about the index. They are all the same index. It's S and P. I can put it back in later. Yeah, is this okay? There is B dagger B minus C, C dagger. So if you happen to do your homework already promoting your operator, you should get the result look like that. Now I'm going to use commutator relationship. So this is what I have. Instead of A dagger A plus A dagger, I have this thing, right? Now I'm going to use my commutator relationship. It says I'm going to false a commutator inside this parenthesis because I want to use my commutator relationship. But then I have an extra term. I should have subtracted it away. Yeah? Okay. But now I claim, see, I'm good. I've been here before. Whenever there's a commutator relationship, this is going to give me something infinity. Because you're a commutator at the same momentum. That's where this, there is delta P minus Q. That's no problem. But this thing gives me something like a delta zero. And this is the same infinity you throw away in the scalar field case. Okay. So I have B dagger B, but then C dagger C because I introduced the commutator. And I'll write B dagger B as the number of B particles, the other one as number of C particles. So in other words, it's important enough, I'll write it. So this is the Hamiltonian. It comes with a energy times NB minus N. Yep.
Please give you a spin again while you're going to zero.
Okay, so let me write to this more carefully. So C has a momentum, and the C dagger has a momentum too, because we only have one integral of P. And the commutator relationship give me some constants. I don't care, but in the delta is this difference of the momentum. Like if you look at this one. So this one gave me a delta zero, and we know delta zero are very bad if you integrate it over something. Okay, so now we're just gonna stare at this and say what's wrong with it. Why can't I have the Hamiltonian of a theory equals to some energy times the number of particle of one type subtracting the number of particle for the other type? What happens? No?
If you increase NC, then the energy keeps falling.
Exactly. You just keep making C particle. The energy keep falling, and you make a perpetual motion machine because you can decrease energy of this system. So in other words, if I take NC to be very large, this Hamiltonian is not bounded from below. So we never want a system that have energy and has no lower bound. So this is problematic. Just physically, you can't have such a system. Let's try the anti-commutator. How is the anti-commutator is going to help us? It's still this thing. And you do B dagger B. Now you use propose the anti-commutator. You realize you subtract something, so you have to add it back. There are some infinities in the middle, but you get what you want, which is the number particle for B plus number particle for C. You can see that your homework 2's negative sign is the directly cause of this negative sign. And normal ordering. And then we will be almost done. So then, but you're like, when I normal order, how can I get rid of the minus sign? Well, it says that you can just define a normal ordering with a minus sign to cancel that minus sign. So now again, it's normal order. And it gave you the correct Hamiltonian. So I'm not going to show this because I prepared some more interesting calculation to show you. But you can, what you can realize, if you are, it's in a footnote somewhere, that it tells you that actually the field satisfy the anti-commutator relationship too. So the derivation is somewhere. If you assumed that your particle, I realize I should write the correct one once. Okay, so if you have, if you B and a C is always zero, if you have a C and a C, C dagger and a C dagger, they are all zero. The only non-vanishing anti-commutator is this one, and then the same one for B. But you were like, but there's nothing wrong with B. Why can't I use commutator? Well, you have the mixed, if you have particle being having the boson, antiparticle being the fermion, and you can, I think the whatever the calculation I'm gonna do in the second half of the lecture is not gonna make sense. For example, the causality. Okay, now let's take the 5-minute break. Exactly. Yeah, we and B is fine, right? You, at this point, we can't really conclude. You need a commutator for B. It's some later calculation that can show you. It's that. Remember, for causality, you want a psi to be like anti-commutator to be zero. Well, you have to pick one. So it's either commutator or psi anti-commutator. Well, since C says we have to use anti-commutator, that's kind of false to B to choose the anti-commutator. Right, because for the Hamiltonian, we definitely need a C to be anti-commutator. So the logic is that since C and B is in the same mode of expansion, and we want something, either this, like at this point, you don't know it's anti-commutator or commutator, but it's either one of them. So if you choose one, then you realize you want the creation annihilation operator. Both follow the choice of the commutator. Oh, both follow the choice. So there's calculation here. So you do this calculation, and then there's a C commutator. Anti-commutator is going to show up. But if B is the commutator, then you can't do anything about these terms. So they're not going to work.
Yep. So when the stuff about the law, the first direct top equation n times
It's equal to zero because m is equal to zero.
No, it's not, because you can say that m not equal. That's the whole point. M is not a zero, but the operator, those two operators itself, when they multiply each other, it gives you. In both lines, you set m to be not a zero.
The right.
But the psi plus bar, psi plus, that is identical.
No.
Because you will see some
glasses. Oh, because
the projection.
When you take the dagger, it becomes the other p.
No, it's still the same p, but it need to swap with the gamma zero.
Oh, so when you swap them, it becomes the other one. And then the second statement is that.
The second statement.
The mass comes from.
That's right. Like if you do that computation, you will find that the psi plus bar psi minus, or the psi minus bar psi plus, but you will not find the other.
Yeah.
Because they vanish.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, makes sense.
This commutator relation, that anti-commutator relation. Three dimensional.
Yeah.
That Lorentz.
What's happening
to you? Well, it's not. Yeah, that's we fall in the track of the not Lorentz invariant already at the very beginning when you say calculate the Hamiltonian.
Yes.
Yeah.
So very good, because I don't know if I have if I have time to cover it today, but. But the consideration, basically you are asking, do you still agree with special relativity if you use a method to break the Lorentz ring? One question you can ask is this, what about causality? Are you still causal? And that's something you can show is you have some operator, which is like observable, and you have some other observable. What you want to show is that the space like that it commutes, and it turns out you can show it. Yeah, that's a very good concern.
You are saying that
there's no way.
The Lagrangian respects to special relativity, because we choose the Lagrangian to be that way.
So the X-ray cuts out is right next to me.
Are we going to get the X-ray? And it's good? Because I go fine. Okay. So after we quantize, we have all this creation annihilation operator. What we are going to do is make some states, right? Finally, we have physical states. Right? So, the first thing to define is a vacuum. There are two things still the same as the scalar case. We still want the vacuum to be normalized to one, and we still want the vacuum to have no energy. The only difference is that we have two types of creation annihilation operator, and both of the annihilation operator should be annihilated. I mean, this is not a new either. If you're dealing with a complex scalar field, you're going to have two of them. They're still both annihilated. I'm saying, regarding vacuum, there's nothing new. We'll copy what we did for the scalar fields. And then Okay. The nice part is when I can define two particle states. But let's define the one particle one. And you say, that the B particle create a one particle state, and then the C particle create some different one particle states, and the standard notation is adding a bar on it. Okay. And then you say, at this point, it's still the same as the scalar case, and you say I'm going to normalize them, except we have spin index, so that should be normalized too. But what an anti-commutator gives us is, for example, if we look at the P1, S1, P2, S2 states, and on the other hand, the P2, S2, P1, S1 state. So these are both B particles. And suppose I have this. Can you tell me how are these two states related? So this is a dagger, sorry, B. Dagger P1 S1 B dagger P2 S2. But on the other hand, this guy is B dagger P2 S2 B dagger P1 S1. So how are the two states related?
Minus sign,
because we have anti-commutators. But what this is saying is if you have two particles, you swap them, you pick up a minus sign, and that tells us we have fermions. So that's how but you should be familiar with this. The anti-commutator in the quantum mechanics case will give you fermion. And the anti-commutator in the QFT case will still give you fermion. Okay, let's look at another example. What about I have PS, a state with PS, PS? So this is like B, P, S dagger, B, P, S dagger. They are anti, so the anti-commute. Looking at the step, no, sorry, I made a big mistake. If there is no dagger, there is only the one with the only annihilation operator will anti-commute, and the only creation operator will also anti-commute. So now, sorry about the mistake. So now you stare at this. If you swap them, what happens? It's an anti-commutator. So I'm going to do the same thing again. I'll swap the first and the second particle. But they are the same. But your conclusion about the last case should still work. I swept, I should pick up a minus sign. And that tells us there is no such state. So this gave us the result that this state that has two particles of the same kind must be zero. It says if you have two fermions occupying the same state, it is not allowed. So anti-commutator give us two things, the fermion statistics and the fermion, the Pauli exclusion principle. So that's pretty neat. I think it's pretty neat. Anti-commutator tells us we have fermions. We really have fermions because we derived the Fermi statistics and
the Pauli exclusion principle wasn't from this historically, right?
Oh, of course not. I don't know, maybe that's
Discovered in the atomic
electron. They want to fill out the electron. Of course it's not. I'm just saying, says, look, it has a really nice feature saying it's a fermion. Okay. But I have been talking about the B particles and the C particles. What are these B and the C particles? I can't tell you what's B and C. It's like Dirac says, I'm going to describe electron, then it's electron. But I can tell you that there is some way you can make a measurement, you can make some operator actually tell the difference between them. So the next point I want to make is antiparticle. Okay. We're going to make an operator, and that operator is called the charge operator. I'm going to measure the charge. There's a symmetry. Well, but see, it goes from, I want to measure the charge to show you that it's an antiparticle. But then if I'm measuring the charge, there must be a conserved current, and then it goes, if you conserve the current, you must have another theorem. For the another theorem, you must have a symmetry. Yeah? I'll write up this logic, because I want to find the charge of the particle and antiparticle, and I find they are different. But this tells me I must have a current. And current tells me that I must have another theorem, conserve the current. Oh, God. And then another theorem tells me there must be a symmetry. I think this logic is pretty good. So what the symmetry does this, besides Lorentz invariant? What symmetry does Dirac Lagrangian have?
U1,
perfect. So I just rotated with some e to the minus. And then the other one will rotate. The other one, they will cancel, perfect. And the Lagrangian does not change. And another theorem tells me I have a current. Given by that. I think this is what Aldo gave you, or very similar to this. Since L doesn't change, we don't have other parts. So this calculation is nice. Look at our Lagrangian. It's extremely convenient to take a derivative of partial cosine. You just have whatever left is there. And now you look at how psi is changing. Take an infinitesimal. You get this. You combine the factors together. Here we go. That's our current. I mean, if we have believe this is a vector current, you can almost say it got to be this one. What other vector current can you write down for Dirac, for Dirac field? Okay, so now we get, so now we go back, there's a symmetry, there is a conserved, the other theorem has conserved charge, and then now we'll calculate the charge. Okay. This computation is not bad. And it's quite similar to what you're going to do in the second homework. So I think I'll show you all these things. Okay, this is when Dirac is happy. See, I have a current, and Dirac look at the density, says, look, this density is positive definite. And he claimed that at this point, he claimed he has written a good theory.
Wong?
Yeah.
For the Lagrangian?
Yeah.
Are we having a different Lagrangian, or did you mean to put I inside the parentheses?
Yep. Oh. Well, the same Lagrangian, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely the same. A mass term that has an I is definitely not good. Okay. So, what do we do, right? The E is just outside. And I think you are doing something similar to this in the homework. So you're going to write some U dagger, B dagger, E to the minus IPX plus V dagger, C E to the plus IPX. So that's the dagger. And then there is one for the non-dagger. Now you just mix match. See what you have. So there's U, B, E to the plus IQX plus V C dagger E to the minus IQX. Okay. So what we're gonna do is there are four terms. And then for each of them, you do the integration of d3x. So, integral of d3x, what it does for you for example, is you have U dagger U, B dagger B, I'm still able to not write down the momentum because P is sent to Q. And this term okay, I think maybe I should write this term carefully at least. So there is d3x, dvp, dvq. U dagger, B dagger, with a subscript p, and a uv with subscript q. And I have e to the minus ipx, e to the plus iqx. Okay. Then you do the integration of d3x, which will send p to q. And then you use this momentum integral to get rid of them, and then you are left with P U Q and everything else drops off, and the last one is you look at your spinner identity. This is just the first term. And if you look at the spinner identity, it says, wonderful, U dagger U will give you 2E times delta RS. So this term drops off, the 2E and that integral cancel whatever there. The first term will give you B dagger B. So then you need to do two more times. Okay. What I'm trying to say is this is the first term, this times this. And you will have to, you will have a very nice spinner identity whenever you have a U and a V cross, and the U cross, then that terms disappear. And the last one give you C dagger. This term times this term give you B dagger B, and the other term give you C dagger. The rest is zero. So now what do we do? We decided to say, let's normal order our operator because we have a prescription to normal order them. So then they have B dagger B is already normal ordered, but C dagger is not, so I'm gonna switch them. So once you have finished the homework, this line to this line will be less mysterious to you. I think it's very hard for me to do this realize my mistake. Doing this calculation on the board probably wouldn't help you unless you just do it yourself. So I'll state the answer. The answer is the charge of the system is equals to E times NB minus NC. So each B particle will contribute a charge, and each C particle will contribute a minus charge. And so that's why we claim they are particle and antiparticle.